Struggling to move your nonprofit forward? You've come to the right place. Welcome to the Nonprofit Architect, where we are giving you the actionable steps you need to launch and grow your nonprofit organization. Now, here's your host, Travis Johnson.
Welcome back to the show. I'm here today with the lovely Betsy Cerullo. Betsy, how are you doing today?
Travis, I am doing great, especially seeing you again. I'm even happier.
Yeah, so none of you can possibly know this. We tried recording a couple of weeks ago, and like there was storms, and the internet is like, we're not playing today, and we got cut off in the middle of it. So this is our reschedule. We already love each other, so this is just going to be easy flowing. I did want to say that Betsy is the author of Shake It Off Leadership, but I want to say, Betsy, like, who are you? What do you do?
Well, Travis, today I am fully the CEO of my company, AdNet AccountNet. We are a professional staffing company and search firm based in Baltimore. We're a federal contractor. We do business with large corporations, and we are a great company. But today I'm in proposal mode. So I've got that hat on, which I was happily to put away to come talk to you about my book, Shake It Off Leadership.
Well, that's so wonderful. Betsy and I have talked a lot, like kind of behind the scenes. She has such a phenomenal attitude, such a fantastic viewpoint, and really just energetic. I don't know if she told me her age or not, but like I couldn't put her over 30. So fantastic.
You are wonderful. So you can take that times two.
No that's chance my that's age. True. We're starting off the show with a complete lie. There's no chance she's 60. Well, I'll let you all decide for yourself. I don't think age isn't obviously not a number. Age is a word. It's three letters. A-G-E, there it is.
Right.
Yeah, it doesn't mean anything.
Doesn't
We're as
matter.
Old as we feel. So, Betsy, I got to say, I've been perusing your book here, and you've got some chapters in there that you go through and you look through, and most of the time you're just like, oh, kind of whatever. But like your chapters and your subtitles, like, knock me out of my seat. Like she gets into like nurturing health, healthy business and life relationships. She gets into health in the finish line, but the health one I want to dive into because it's so impactful, not only for the nonprofit world, but for whatever industry you're in. But this, check out, I'm going to read these subtitles for y'all real quick. Burnout, unpick your poison, grieving on the job and financial health. I'm in burnout right now. Those of you that know me really closely, I had a really rough start to my year, and it's, I don't know, second week of May, I did a retreat at a fantastic ranch, shadytrailranch.com. It's in Texas. It's owned by Fletcher Cox, NFL Philadelphia Eagles defensive lineman. And he is just a wonderful, wonderful man, top, bottom, left, right. Like just seeing him out there with his animals, like just like the biggest grin on his face, played flag football with him, with a group of people. And for flag football, it was pretty rough because I've got like a gash on my back. Like my whole leg looks like it got blasted with a shotgun because I took a little tumble out there. I'm 40 now. I'm not exactly in my 20s and agile as I'd like to be. And for flag football, there's quite a
heavy. Did you hold your own?
I did. I scored two touchdowns. That's pretty exciting.
Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fabulous.
The fact that my old, wide, slow self was open is just because they had no respect for me at all. So I called in two of these things. But what was the purpose and goal of writing Shake It Off Leadership? And then you thought it was so valuable to bring to the market.
It was time that I told my story, especially being from the LGBT community. I didn't see a lot of books out there from our community. There's starting to be more and more, but still not many. And also from a woman's perspective, I am all about empowering women, not like I would want to empower you, but I'm all about empowering women to be at their best. And I wanted to take my experiences, put it on paper to see how it could help someone else. And I think for me at this stage in my career and my life, it was very cathartic for me and very healing, which is why I chose some of those particular titles of the chapters.
I love it. And I've had people tell me over the years, I need to write a book. And when I like 10 people told me, I was like, oh, I'm going to write it. And then, it didn't happen. And like 25 people told me I should write a book, and then 50. And I think I'm well over 100 now. And I had started writing my book. And long story short, it got, my car got broken into and my backpack got stolen. It had my laptop. Before I understood the value of cloud storage, it was all on the hard drive and completely just crushed me losing all that. Cause it was like 85 word page documents. Like it was thick. And it got taken away, and I haven't had the juice, but now like with so much has happened since that point, like, I'm not sure where I would focus my book on, because I don't believe that some random person in a store that doesn't know who I am is going to be like, ooh, like autobiography of Travis Johnson. Let me pick, like, that's, you know, I'm not that level. I don't think, I don't know.
You never know.
You never know.
And I thought that too. I'd get to different points of the book and I would say, who the heck cares? You know, who cares why I did this or this, that, and the other thing. I just kept going with it. And I think for me, if I made a difference for one, two people, that someone thought of life differently, then I'm really happy with that. Really happy with that. Because so many people helped to influence my life. So if there's a way that I can give back, like as part of my legacy, that's important to me.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I fully agree. I really got to figure out what the point is, because I've got a lot of stuff I can talk about. Like, stuff's happened in my world, you know what I mean? But like, I want to talk to you about health and especially burnout. What is it that you talk about burnout in your book? Like, how did that affect you? How did you move past it? And then how do you formulate and help someone work through their burnout?
Burnout's dangerous and it creeps up on us. And I think the majority of us operate with it more often than we think. Because usually when you get to that point of burnout, then it's like, oh my gosh, I got to do something different. Vacation, a retreat, a massage or something like that. But how long does it take us to get to that point? You know, like I see, I have a vacation coming up in a couple of weeks, so I can feel myself counting down, but I also feel myself getting a little toasty. And what that toasty is, I might move more things around on my desk, or I may not feel or be as organized as I typically am, or my threshold for tolerance gets a little short. So I've got to do things in the interim because we can't be on vacation all the time. That sounds nice, but we can't be.
You know, I've getting short with people like the last week or so before I left, I got a little sharp with some people. I'm not that kind of guy. Like if I'm loud, like if my volume's up, maybe I'm trying to like settle the room now, get the room's attention, or like I'm boisterous, but I'm not like loud with a person, like super rare. So like when I did it, and my wife is still recovering from brain surgery, but she's at a point where she's able to, you know, go to the grocery store. And she sent me a picture where she's in her scrubs. She's going to work today just for a couple of hours, you know, so she's, I'm not like abandoning her or anything, but like, it's like, she didn't want me to go. She didn't feel she was ready. I was like, babe, I wouldn't suggest this if you weren't ready, you know?
Yeah.
She's like, well, do you really have to go? I was like, I don't, but like, I yelled at this person. I was mean to this person. I said some things right. I regret to this person. I did this. And I was like, if I don't do something to recharge, reconnect, whatever the thing is, like, that's not going to slow down. It's going to get worse. And I don't want to treat people in my circle like that. Even me, I'm so happy and engaging and joyful most of the time. Like, this is a time where I'm just like, whew, man, I need a break. So like, how do you recommend people like bring some kind of recharge into their day-to-day lives?
Well, it can be simple things. You know, we have a beautiful day here in Baltimore. And I think once you and I get done, I might go take a walk around my neighborhood just to clear my head. You know, exercise is important. So whatever your mode of exercise is, I mean, if you think about it, you don't have to go pump out iron for 2 hours. You can just do something for 20 minutes to break a sweat or to move your body in a different way. Yoga, you know, I could go down the list, but there's so many things that if we gift ourselves 20 minutes, it can make a difference. You know, I know there are times when I just have to sit in a hot bath for a half hour. And, you know, again, it's not a lot of time, but it's almost as though we have to push ourselves to give ourselves permission to take that break. We're adding on staff, and I was interviewing someone this morning who used to work for me, gosh, about 10, 15 years ago. I said, I don't like to micromanage people. I never really did. But, you know, I'm getting too old for watching over, if you will. If we all know what we have to do, let's get it done. Obviously, we all check in. You know, I think when you have people who are leaders, that they're constantly pressing you and they're standing over your shoulder, that's exhausting. So if that's how you lead or manage, cut it out and it'll save you a lot of energy and you'll feel better.
I have so much to do in my day. Mm-hmm. But if I had to also like stand over my people, and I don't want someone standing over me, like that's uncomfortable. Yeah. Like, hey, do the thing. And they want to stand there and watch me do it. I'm like, I know how to type, man. Could you go away?
Yeah.
And I joke, I was in another interview. And I don't remember if I was the host or if I was the guest, but I was like, 3 D's of leadership, man. He's like, what? 3 D's of leadership? Delegate, disappear, man. Get the heck out of here. Let me do the thing. You know,
let me do
the thing. I'll get back to you. Well, you know, I do good work. You know that I get the job done. You know, I'm going to come to you if I hit some kind of roadblocks. I'm not just going to let it slide. I'm like, go back and manage Jack. Like, Jack's a pain. Like, go get him. Don't stand over me. Like, what are you doing? Like, who has time for that? You have to give yourself permission. But really, when you think about things like nutrition and health in general, like, mm-hmm. you dedicate time to sleep. And if you don't sleep, you lose your ability to solve problems, and you have all these other health concerns that come up. If you don't eat, let alone eat right, like if you don't eat at all, right, you lose energy, you lose muscle mass, and you get irritable, and it causes all sorts of problems. If you don't dedicate time to something else, exercise, yoga, 5-minute grocery store meditation.
Right.
Pull into the parking lot, do 5 minutes mm-hmm. of mindfulness before you're run in there and go through the groceries to run back to get home to cook. You're in a parking lot somewhere. Take that time.
That's right. That's right. You know, every morning before my feet touch the floor, I will spend time in prayer. You know, before COVID, I tended to get up, you know, let the dogs out, eat breakfast, whatever. And I'd find a quiet spot in the house and I would meditate and I would pray. And then I don't know what it was, but through COVID, I just said, wow, I don't have to commute. I might as well lay here and just say my prayers. And, you know, that really grounded me. So when my feet touched the floor, I felt different. You know, I felt complete even before my day started. And that was just a really small change.
Yeah, starting the day with gratitude just puts everything that happens in the day in a whole other perspective. The next part of this chapter is called Unpick Your Poison. And I'm so excited for you to share with our fans, our listeners, our followers, what does it mean to unpick your poison?
I think in some way, shape, or form, most people have some kind of behavior that they would probably want to change. Mine happened to be with alcohol. I could drink with the best of them, and I don't miss it because I feel like I drank for a lifetime. You know, I got to a point about, I'd actually been wanting to get sober for, I'd say about 15 years. I did go 1 year where I was sober. That was the year I met my wife 24 years ago. So I always had something to go back to, like, wow, something good really happened. About 7 years ago, I said, you know, I think I'm done. It doesn't feel good anymore. And I stopped and I started going to AA meetings and working steps and, you know, whatever practices I needed to. And 7 years later, I feel so clear, crisp. Burnout's very different for me, because my body feels better. I certainly have a lot more money in the bank by not purchasing wine of, you know, I've just loved wine. So there was just a lot of good things. There's a lot of good things. And, you know, for some people it's food. I totally get it. I'd like to sit on the couch most nights and chomp on my blue chip chips or my pretzels and stuff. But does that really help? Nope. So I stopped. I started eating fruit at night. Doesn't sound like fun, but I sleep better and I feel better. And that's fun.
Oh, absolutely. When I retired here at the end of February, there was a lot going on in my life. A whole ton, like big things were happening. Big things were happening. And got overwhelmed, as most people would. And I called my dad, talked through some things. He gave me a little bit of perspective. And I was like, you know what? I appreciate the perspective, but something that came out of the conversation or a realization, if it wasn't expressed verbally, was I'm not going to do anything right now that I don't have to do.
Mm-hmm.
And when I got a little bit of space in there, I kept like just a little mini thing next to my calendar. And it was nothing more than a plus, a circle, or a minus after the event. Mm-hmm. I had a before the event and an after the event. And it was just, do I feel good and energized after this thing? Is there no real kind of reaction whatsoever? Or do I feel worse than the state going into it? Like, do I feel drained? Do I feel worn down? And there was a couple of things on my weekly schedule, kind of my weekly rotation, that I was like, you know what? I don't look forward to this thing. When I'm doing it, I'm not interested. Like, it feels painful while I'm there. When I'm done, like, I feel drained. I went through and I got rid of that stuff. I'm not doing it.
How do you feel now?
Well, I feel better. I definitely feel better. I don't like, I'm dreading a certain time of the day of the week. Like, when that happens, like that time comes and goes, I'm like, you know what? I feel great right now. But when you start offloading that stuff, feel it. If it's in your business or your nonprofit, you normally do it. And for some reason, see if someone else can do it, or see if it's even necessary. If that thing is not necessary, like if you don't do it for a couple of weeks and it has no impact to the bottom line, just get rid of it all together.
That's right. And you know, that goes with like the concept of delegating. I think sometimes people may think by delegating, oh, she's lazy, or she's pushing her work off on somebody else, or he is pushing her work off on someone else. My feeling is, in my role, when you're in a certain type of leadership position, you're supposed to be a visionary, you're supposed to be a strategist. If we as leaders, whatever level of leader you're at, if we start always getting involved in the minutia, that's not forwarding your company or your employees. Now, I have to tap myself on the shoulder periodically and say, don't do that. So, and something that I can do with my eyes closed might feel challenging to an employee who's never done it. So I try my best to move things and distribute some of those tasks to my staff. I'm not perfect at it, but I'm getting better at it because I love the visionary work and the strategy.
When we look at our role as CEOs or executive directors or founders, really the goal should be kind of twofold. One really is that you are the spare tire. When all the wheels are running, something goes flat, someone needs time off, you've got to fire someone for something terrible reason, what if someone gets sick, whatever happens, yeah, like
right.
You're qualified uniquely as that person to step in and fill that mm-hmm. role in the interim, be the spare mm-hmm. tire. But the day-to-day stuff, the day-to-day tasks, that's got to happen without you. If
that's
you're spending
right.
time doing that stuff, how can you drive the vision? How can you sell opportunity? How can you navigate your business, your nonprofit, your organization through the terrain?
Right.
If you're busy, I don't know, drafting emails that are going to go out to the whomever, you can't do both effectively. No one can.
Correct.
If you think of this right now, if you're feeling this, you're listening to me, Travis, I do both effectively.
No, you don't.
You might be fibbing to yourself right now. Or you're the most amazing thing I've ever heard of, and I just don't know you yet, in which case I want to hear from you. Send me an email, nonprofitarchitect@gmail.com. I want to hear that story, if that's a thing.
Mm-hmm.
When we're looking at,
you have to be careful.
You have to. It's so hard to do all of this stuff. And it's so much harder if you're also trying to do everyone else's job.
That's correct.
It's even harder than normal. The next section is grieving on the job. And I don't know. I read through it, but I want to hear what that means coming from you.
Well, sadly, it really hit me back in 2011. One of my brothers died suddenly of a heart attack. And it was such a shock to my entire family. So what do you do with that? You know, you have bereavement leave, but grief doesn't go away when your bereavement leave is done. So then I had another brother pass away suddenly, 18 months later. I'm like, holy crap. Now, I felt more prepared the second time. So I seemed to kind of move through it with a little bit more, I don't know if ease is the right word, but I think I had more tools to help me go through it. But grief, you can't, even though people try to, you can't package it and put it in the closet. Because if you put it away over there, it is going to show up unexpectedly. And I know that there were times I could, you know, I had a way of, I don't even know if it was masking it. I just knew if I was having a tough day, I would tell my team in the morning, hey, I just want you to let you know, I woke up, I'm kind of having a tough day. You don't have to walk around on eggshells with me. I'll tell you if I need some, but I just want to tell you, I'm feeling a little shaky today, but, you know, and then I would have my team say, well, why don't you just stay home? No, it's not that I don't want to work. I just know I'm not my usual self. I'm having some feelings. But what I found that was also a good model for my employees, that I could be strong enough to acknowledge, look, I'm having some feelings and I'm still able to do my job effectively. Or if it got to a point and said, you know, guys, I need to go home a little bit earlier, or I'm probably just going to not wake up with the alarm. And that would make big difference. And it also gave my employees permission do that if they needed.
Oh, that's wonderful. I'm glad that you're able to have that kind of transparency and vulnerability as a CEO to be able to share that, than to allow your staff to also have that as well.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. So, you know, remember, grief doesn't go away after the bereavement days are done. That's crazy.
Do you feel your nonprofit's not getting enough in monthly recurring donations? If so, then you need Sharing the Credit. Every time you go into a business and swipe your debit or credit card, one of the fees taken out by Visa and MasterCard at the end of the month goes back into the system. Now, normally this is a bank, but it is legally allowed to go to a registered nonprofit. Sharing the Credit worked with a small local nonprofit. They took this information to their donor base and 19 businesses started using Sharing the Credit. Now, this small local nonprofit receives $11,000 in monthly recurring, unrestricted, ongoing donations. This is the definition of sustainable funding. Businesses have to take plastic, so they might as well use part of those fees to support their favorite cause, your nonprofit. Check out my affiliate link in the show notes for Sharing the Credit. Book a call with Will Black and start your journey to more donations and better relationships today.
So you also talk about financial health in this chapter, and that's not a subject that a lot of people want to talk about. They don't want to, they talk about leadership all day long. They can't even talk about their leadership, but they can talk about finances all day long. It's not that they're talking about their finances. What do you want people to really understand and grasp about their financial health?
It's all connected. So if you're in some type of leadership role and you're wanting to set good examples, it's not smart if you're, because I've seen this before many times, if your company's not doing well, it's really not smart to go out and buy a high-end luxury car, brand new car, as you're either laying off people or you're not being generous with your staff. And here you come rolling up. And I would be stunned when some of my colleagues over the years would do that. I'd be like, wait a minute, I was just in a peer advisory group where you were talking about some not so good things, so that doesn't match. So you have to be careful with how you portray yourself with your team. If you are out there spending a lot of money, so is that a poison you need to unpick? Are you addicted to shopping? I certainly have a lot of stuff in our house, and and there got a point, there became a point where I said, okay, this won't work. So I think you just have to really take a look at where you put your money, because that's important. You know, if you want to have a healthy company, have healthy money practices in your personal life. You know, you want to have healthy practices in your personal life. Make sure those practices are healthy and fair and equitable in your company. It's all connected.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I fully agree. When I was still in the Navy, we got to a point early in our early 20s where credit cards became a problem. And I think this happens to a lot of young people. And I'm not a fan of the blame game, but I feel like so many families just don't talk about that sort of thing. So you leave a house and the house has been created and built and filled full of stuff, but it took 30 years to accumulate that stuff. And when you leave the nest, you go and you try to build a nest. Well, you usually build something based on example, whatever that looks like. So you remember how many times you went out to eat in a week. You remember how, you know, what kind of things you bought at the grocery store, kind of. Then you look at the prices and you're like, I can afford anything more than ramen. But if they lie to themselves and they say, I can swipe this and just make a monthly payment, eventually that thing gets larger than you can repay in a month.
And I know in college campuses, because this happened to me too, the credit card companies show up with their tables because we are prime victims. And there's not always the guidance for that. But, you know, one of the things that I tell our kids over the years and what I tell other young people is that you might want certain things that you see those of us who are established have, but remember, it took a lot of years to have that. I didn't come right out of the box with what you think you see. I had to go without and make sacrifices in order to get to that point. But, you know, we're in a world where everything is immediate. And sometimes people judge their success on what you have. I mean, look at social media, what people put on social media to make it seem like all they have.
Never tells the full story.
Nope. They're lacking somewhere else.
What you don't hear is that more than 80% of millionaires are first generation. Mm-hmm. What you don't hear is the average millionaire never earned more than $75,000 in a year. They invested in it, built up over time. Mm-hmm. What mm-hmm. you don't see in the Instagram is the fact that they rented a set specifically for a photo shoot that day to make it look like what it is. What you don't see is the average millionaire drives a six-year-old car that never cost that much in the first place. There's too many people out there mm-hmm. trying to look the part yeah. without being the part. And I can understand why they might feel that way, mm-hmm. but that doesn't get them to their goal. We got ourselves in debt, worked our way out of debt, paid it off, spent a good decade helping other people with their personal finances. And then when we were coming up on the end of my Navy career, I knew I'd be taking a pay cut, right? Going down. Mm-hmm. And our focus was to make sure that everything in our life was in order. Right. And the vehicles we had were paid off. In fact, we bought vehicles. We replaced the ones we had with a certain amount of time to ensure they were paid off when I retired, just specifically so that payment wouldn't be there. So we're living right now. You know, my wife had brain surgery. She's not working. Mm-hmm. Well, no, she just started. She's there today. Today she's there, just got back. But it's been 4.5 months since she worked. Right. And my paycheck went down to less than half of what it was mm-hmm. with all the extra benefits mm-hmm. I have coming in. But if we hadn't taken the time to position ourselves to do that, we've got a healthy checking and a more than healthy savings and a more mm-hmm. than healthy investment plan. Mm-hmm. That all took time to get to the point of where it is. And I don't know if you know this, I made a boatload of mistakes, tons of mistakes. There was a point in our lives where, like, if I saw it in my checking account, I was like, I'm going to spend it on some whatever crap. I remember my wife taking our son to like the grocery store or whatever, and he'd come home with a little car and this and that, and it was cute a couple of times. And I was like, babe, he's got like a whole like thing full of these cars. She said, well, I just feel bad. You don't have the stuff that we had, this, that, and the other. I was like, I understand how you feel that way. We have enough. He has enough. Mm-hmm. So currently what we're teaching is that every time he goes out, he gets to get something.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's not the what we're trying to reinforce or what we're trying to do. And I remember when he got a little bit older and he was asking about toys and this, that, and the other. And I looked at him, it's like, look, buddy, we can literally buy anything and everything at the store if we wanted to. Mm-hmm. But is that really going to make your life any better? Is that going to make you feel any better? Because you're going to play with this stuff for 2 days and never touch it again.
Right.
So what in here really has value that you really want to put your money on? And he was like, He's like, we can get anything. I was like, I mean, we can. I'm like, do you really want that thing? Like, does a friend have it? You want to try it, see if it's worth it? He's like, that's interesting. He's like, I do have a friend that has that. And he went over and tried it. And he's like, yeah, I'm so glad we didn't buy that. It was fun for 10 minutes. And after that, it sucked.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, interesting concept, because we would do that over the years with cars. So if there was a certain car that we thought, well, it'd be kind of interesting to have, or so we would rent that car when we'd go on vacation and then be like, well, that's a piece of junk. And because you try it out first. It's really prudent. And especially through COVID, you know, all the issues with people buying cars and then or you couldn't get cars. And now people are starting to get smart about used cars. So when I would bring my car in for maintenance, hey, you want to sell your car? Like, no, we'll give you top dollar. No, I'm really happy with mine. It's paid off and I take care of it. No, thanks.
Yeah, I get the same offer. I bought a GMC Sierra a number of years ago for $23,000, paid it off, put another 40,000 miles on there. Like, they called me like, we'll give you $31,000 for this truck.
Wow.
And I'm like, I like the dollar amount, but then I have to go get a new, I don't want another payment. I don't want another,
right?
Like, what am I going to go replace it with the market where it's at? I'm like, I can't do it. Plus my truck is great.
Yeah.
Driving it right now on my road trip. Like, why would I? What's the benefit? Like, oh, you can get a $60,000 truck. It's not twice as good as the truck that I have.
Well, you know, at the beginning of COVID, I actually felt like I had bought a new car because there was a really long time I didn't go anywhere. So I actually got in the car. I got in the car at one point. I'm like, where's that? And so it was kind of funny. Like, oh, I feel like I have a new car.
My uncle had this thing with, he's got a motorcycle, he's got an auto shop, he's got a bunch of stuff. He's like, I got the itch. He's like, I really want like a new bike. I was like, do you want a new bike? Or is there a thing or two you could do to your current motorcycle that you get that feeling of a new bike? And he was like, huh. He took off the fenders and the gas tank and repainted them. He went and bought a fancy new seat. Mm-hmm. And then he made a sissy bar. A sissy bar goes off like the back axle and goes up and makes a big loop, mm-hmm. or there's a couple different designs, and he like hand fabricated one of those and painted it. Wow. He put it together. It cost him like $300, $400, and a whole new bike.
Yeah,
whole new vibe, a whole new feel, no, whole new look, and he felt great, right? And he's like, mine countertops. My wife wanted granite countertops. I understand the allure of granite countertops, of course, or whatever. The problem is we just don't have this money lying around. A, B. Mm-hmm. We have 75 square feet of countertop in the kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not dropping. It was like $100 a square foot or more. I'm like, I'm not doing it. She found a really cool paint system where she would mm-hmm. lay down a urethane and sponge paint this stuff on and then seal it. It looks amazing. Amazing. Wow. No one knows, unless we tell them, no one knows it's painted because it looks absolutely ridiculous.
Wow.
$250.
Phew.
You know what I mean?
That's fabulous.
Are you looking for the new thing, or are you looking for a new feeling?
Right.
What is it that you're searching for? What is it that you're looking for?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Mm-hmm. We have certainly done a lot of repurposing in the house. We also really shopped remnants for marble countertops. You know, we swapped out some countertops. You won't believe how much money you save. Like when I watch HGTV with my wife and people go, granite countertops. And we look at each other like, come on, are you that stupid?
Well, people don't know you
other ways to seal
them
it.
And maintain them and reseal them.
Right.
Yeah. Right. Like they're not without their woes. When you wrote this book, it was a lot of it about your journey, and you talked about the healing that you went through. What about your journey do you really want other people to understand?
If there's something in your life that really matters to you, don't give up. Don't give up on it. You know, in 30 plus years of having my company, there were so many economic downturns that I could legitimately have said, I'm done. And no one would have thought otherwise because so many other people were done. But I believed in what we did and what we stood for and also my abilities and recreate it, if you will. That's, I think, part of our sustainability is that we're always looking at what's the opportunity? How can we be even better? How can we change for the good? That type of thing. I really feel, especially when it comes to leadership, if you just don't give up, you know, leaders today, we have to be really resilient. And that's why all those other things in the book about grief, financial health, and pick your poison, all that wrapped together makes you a healthy leader. So you can really see and hear clearly what's needed.
I love it. I absolutely love that. If you could give one piece of advice to someone that's currently working at a company, but wanting to start their own, what might you tell them?
Take some quiet time, whether you're sitting at a computer or you sit out, you take out a, you know, it could be a big easel pad, whatever. It could be a journal, whatever it is. Start writing out what you want to do. Create a pro and con list. And if you're the only one that's seeing it, it doesn't matter what's on that list. It doesn't matter how wacky you think your idea is. Just begin to write it out. Because when you take that quiet time and you start thinking, wow, maybe I can do this. Or, you know, I always say, what small change could you make, or what small step could you take that could bring you closer to something you really want? You don't have to go resign tomorrow. You don't have to go sell your house and move into whatever. Try something small. Test it out. See how it feels. Confide to a buddy, someone who you really trust.
Is the first thing they try, is it going to work?
Heck no.
Not even close, right? It's going to be a disaster, whatever they try.
And it might. Yeah. But
it's
like
going to be a lot of data collection, and you'd be like, well, that didn't work.
Yes.
I'm like, yeah. this works kind of good. I can tweak this. And then you reformulate it and you give it another shot. A little bit better.
That's right. And how many no's do you have to hear to finally get the yes that gets you in the door? But I look at it that in the instance for business, it's no for now. It's just no for now. But if I hear no, okay, I'm going to respect the no, but it's no for now.
That's right. One more thing I wanted to look at. I love looking at all your subtitles in your books. One section is dedicated to the fakers and the takers. Tell me about, I got to know about the fakers and the takers.
We all have them. We have all been exposed to people that say they're one thing and they really are not. The ones that will just tell you, oh, I'm such a giver, but really they're taking, you have to pay attention. I certainly had that occur in my professional life, and it was very costly, both financially and emotionally, and detrimental to my company. But when I mustered up the courage to say enough and stopped that behavior, it totally changed everything around. But you have to just open your eyes and tell yourself, honest with yourself of what you see, because if you keep sweeping it under the rug, it's just going to get worse. It always does.
Understanding what the dynamic is of where you're at, and is it getting better or is it getting worse? And if it's getting worse, can it be fixed or does it have to be replaced?
Right. Or are you trying to fix it because you want to avoid the inevitable? I've been there too. Now, no.
A lot of medicine and treatments and therapies and physical therapy is trying to delay surgery. Yes. Sometimes just got to go under the knife and get it done.
That's true. You do.
Yeah.
That's true.
Betsy, I want to thank you so much for being my guest today, providing so much value and giving us a little insight to your book, Shake It Off Leadership. What is the number one best place for people to connect with you?
If you go to my website, BetsyCerullo.com, you'll learn more about the book. You can also get a free download, a workbook of the book that'll give you some exercises that I think would be a good start for you to taking some of the steps that we've talked about. You can email me at info@BetsyCerullo.com, and you could go to my corporate website, AdnetP3.com, to learn more about what we do across the country for our customers.
Thanks so much for being my guest today, Betsy.
Travis, it was a pleasure, and thank you for having me.
You've been listening to The Nonprofit Architect. To listen to all our past shows, visit http://nonprofitarchitect.org. And be sure to subscribe, rate, and review our show. Thank you.